Greetings, friends, fellow patriots, fellow citizens, and even non-citizens and those around the globe who are tuning into our podcast. My name is Tom Zawistowski, and I'm the host of this podcast, and I'm the president of the We the People Convention. And this podcast and everything we do, from our website to our phone app, our emails, our text messages, our gifts to other conservative groups, donations we make to help support other groups around the country, our travel, all of that is paid for through the generous donations of the donors to the We the People Convention. And I just can't thank you guys enough for giving, even though, you know, I know a lot of you are struggling, the economy, we're going to cover this in this podcast, how bad things really are with inflation, and you can't give, but we thank those of you who can give. And if you can give, just go to wethepeopleconvention.org and click on the donate link. I want to, you know, welcome you to the St. Patrick's Day version of the We the People Convention News and Opinion Podcast. Though my name is Tom Zawistowski, and I am indeed Polish, my mom's name is Shirley. My sisters are Colleen and Patty. So you can imagine that there's some Irish there. And my mom was mostly Irish and German. And so we always got dressed up, you know, because she wanted to make sure that even though her name was Zawistowski, that people knew we were Irish. So I'm wearing my green sweater in honor of my mom, who's going to be 90 years old this year, God willing, here in November. So I hope you guys will celebrate St. Patrick's Day. I don't think anybody's ever been accused of cultural misappropriation for getting out and celebrating St. Patrick's Day. Just don't overdo it. It's on Sunday, and that's probably a good thing. So enjoy the holiday. Before we get going with the show, I do want to say that it's been a really tough time here at the We the People Convention, because as you know, or you should know if you're new to this, you should know that we're based in Akron, Ohio, and our organization originally was a state organization. And it wasn't until the 2020 election, when we took out a full page ad in the Washington Times asking President Trump to declare temporary martial law to hold a revote of the 2020 election, that we got like a million people to our website and we became a national organization. So, with the election here in Ohio, which of course, we've been involved for 15 years since the Tea Party started, and, you can't help but get involved. But I'll talk a little bit later about how bad it's been and just how ugly politics is and how much I hate it and how much, I just question whether good can come out of a system that is just institutionally so inherently evil. And that's no exaggeration, folks. That's an understatement. And I'll give you a taste of that here in a little bit. So I just want to say to you that, we haven't been able to post as many stories to our website as we normally do, because again, I try to keep the Ohio stuff in the Ohio bucket and not, subject all the rest of you around the country to just what's going on in Ohio. And I think we do a good job of that, but I did end up posting an important story that we'll cover that affects all of you, because it explains what the left and the rhinos are doing here in Ohio to try to stop all of us, our whole MAGA agenda. So we're going to talk about that. So please forgive us if we, haven't, given you as many stories to read and things on the website this week. But our election is next Tuesday, so things should get a lot better after that. Boy, I'm really looking forward to it. As you can see, our flag is still hanging upside down, and that's not out of, disrespect for those of you who are new. It's a warning to you and to your neighbors. And if you go to flag upside down, if you search flag upside down at wepeopleconvention.org, you'll see a video by Gordon Chang talking about how we are at war with China, but we don't act like it. And then, it tells you how you can make, a sign like the one I just showed you to put in your yard to tell people, why is my flag upside down? And there's a little pocket card you can get. We are at war with China, or more specifically, China is at war with us. I talked about that last week, and now I'm going to talk some more about this week after some developments that have come out. So just understand that flag's upside down for a reason, and it's not going to get turned upside right side up until we restore our republic and the rule of law, and we start to, you know, defend ourselves against the war that China's waging on us. Those of you who watch the podcast, you know, frequently understand that we never, ever forget the January 6th political prisoners. Why? Because they are the canary in the coal mine. They are us. We, any one of us, could be in their position. They are not being, you know, arrested for credible legal reasons. They're being persecuted by the Biden regime, which is trying to stomp out any resistance to their Marxist intentions and the destruction of our country. And so, you know, we pray for them every week because, you know, we define winning on this podcast. Winning. What is winning this election 2024? Why are we trying to elect Trump? Why are we trying to elect mega congressmen? Why are we trying to, you know, take back the Senate so that we can, you know, change the, you know, to fight back and to take apart what the left has done to us? So that's what it's about. So what is winning? Winning is when the January 6th political prisoners are all released. They've been pardoned. They've been given compensation for this horrible thing that our nation has done to them. And the people who've illegally persecuted them by, you know, misapplying justice are then put to trial so that they will be given justice. And I guarantee you it'll be more fair than anything they've done for the January 6th political prisoners. So we please take a minute and just say a prayer for the January 6th political prisoners and their families and their lawyers. May God help them get through this horrible ordeal. And it is indeed horrible. We'll talk about some January 6th news next. But also their families, to just know that this will end. They will come home someday and just hang in there. And God hopefully gives their attorneys more tools to fight for their release and to get them justice, which I don't think can come in a court in Washington, D.C., as we've seen, but hopefully will come this time next year after we've restored our, you know, the rule of law by electing Donald Trump and taking back the expanding our congressional majority and winning the Senate. So just please join me in a quick prayer. Thank you very much, and please keep them in your prayers throughout the week. Now, this is an important story. Jim Jordan demands answers about DOJ's persecution of Blaze investigative reporter Steve Baker. Notice it says persecution, not prosecution. House Judiciary Chairman Jim Jordan wants President Joe Biden's Department of Justice to explain why it targeted Blaze investigative reporter Steve Baker for covering the January 6th chaos at the U.S. Capitol. Baker, one of the leading conservative journalists covering the fallout from the events at the Capitol, faces four charges connected to his presence while reporting at the demonstrations. And Leonard penned on March 12th, Jordan demanded U.S. Attorney for Washington, D.C., Matthew Graves, and this is one of the guys who we need to have put on trial for his abuse of the law and misuse of the law against the January 6th political prisoners. That guy, Matthew Graves, I want to see on trial next year at this time. That he hand over documents, communications, and other information related to Baker's arrest and charges, as well as the investigation, prosecution, or arrest of any journalist covering the events at the U.S. Capitol. There are serious questions about selective prosecution in this case, as well as the department's commitment to the First Amendment rights of journalists, Jordan warned. The Republican noted that other journalists were in the Capitol at the same time as Mr. Baker, who has not been charged with crimes, but Baker was. He has been critical of the department's handling the January 6th investigation and prosecutions, and therefore he was charged. Let's see. As Mr. Baker's attorney noted, the department is not allowed to decide what press coverage is like and what press coverage offends it and take prosecutorial action based on those judgments, Jordan wrote. The FBI told Baker last month to turn himself in without disclosing the exact charges he would face. So think about that. Turn yourself in, but we're not going to tell you what we're charging you with. Really? Wow. When Baker self-surrendered in Dallas on March 1st, the FBI fingerprinted, photographed, handcuffed, and placed Mr. Baker in the back of an FBI vehicle, transported him to the courthouse, and brought him before the magistrate judge in a belly chain, box cuffs, and leg shackles, just like they did with the other January 6th prisoners. Totally unnecessary. This guy's a journalist. He doesn't need to be in a belly chain and box cuffs, right? What's he going to do? Beat you with his notebook? Mr. Baker's counsel, a former federal prosecutor, stated that in his long career with the department, he never once saw in an initial appearance on a misdemeanor charge where the defendant was told to report first to the FBI to be fingerprinted and photographed before going to the courthouse, Jordan said. Not only did Jordan say this conduct smacks of harassment and selective treatment for a disfavored criminal defendant, but he also wrote that the DOJ's actions inherently contradict its alleged principles. The disparate treatment of disfavored groups violates the department's mission of equal justice under the law, said Jordan. Jordan also noted that members of the Judiciary Committee filed an amicus brief to the Supreme Court, which is considering whether the department has improperly interpreted financial crime statutes to sentence January 6th defendants to 20-year prison terms. This is the major, 1502, obstruction of official proceeding, which this Graves guy and the DOJ and FBI have misused and the Supreme Court is going to hear. We're glad that they filed an amicus brief. Explaining how the department's conduct criminalizes politics and weaponizes the administration of justice. All of these issues raise concerns about the Biden administration's commitment to equal application of the law, Jordan concluded. So, I'm glad to see that they're getting after this because, again, these are all injustices, folks. And that's why I said the goal. We know we have won. We know we have America back. That flag gets turned right side up when stuff like this is fixed, okay? So then there was more news. Hidden January 6th transcripts revealed undermining House committee's claims. So what is this about? Well, a previously hidden transcript of an interview conducted by a U.S. House of Representatives panel that investigated January 6th, breach of the U.S. Capitol, has been revealed undermining the committee's claim. Anthony Ornato, who was the White House Deputy Chief of Staff during the break-in at the Capitol, told the committee that he overheard Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, who was on the phone with Washington Mayor Muriel Bowser. According to the transcript, Mr. Meadows wanted to ensure Ms. Bowser had everything she needed for the rally when they were going to certify the election. Mr. Meadows wanted to know if she needed any more guardsmen. Mr. Ronato testified to the committee, and I remember the number 10,000 coming up of the president wants to make sure that you have enough. He's willing to ask for 10,000 National Guard. I remember that number. That's what you said. Now that you said it, it reminded me of it. Ms. Bowser said that she was all set. No need for any more troops, right? Which was part of the setup. Mr. Ornato was speaking on January 28th to the House Select Committee to investigate the January 6th attack on the United States Capitol. The committee said in its final report, again, they lied. The committee was a kangaroo court to do nothing but try to falsely accuse all of us of being part of an insurrection and Donald Trump of leading it. The committee said in its final report that it found no evidence supporting the idea that former President Donald Trump ordered 10,000 troops to be ready on January 6th. Really? Well, this transcript says that's not true. The former J6 Select Committee apparently withheld Mr. Ornato's critical witness testimony from the American people because it contradicted their predetermined narrative, Representative Barry Loudermilk from Georgia, who released the transcript, said in a statement. Mr. Ornato's testimony proves that Mr. Meadows had said all along President Trump did, in fact, offer 10,000 National Guard troops to secure the Capitol. So this news now to another important story, because as you know, they've been destroying evidence. The House may refer January 6th committee members like Adam Schiff and Liz Cheney for prosecution for destroying evidence. That's how bad this is, folks. The people in our Congress are themselves criminals. And while referring them for charges now isn't going to do anything, because the corrupt Biden, DOJ and FBI and all the rest of them were in on the Fed's erection, it's going to be important a year from now that whoever Trump appoints as Attorney General goes after the January 6th congressman for destroying evidence. Here's what it says. House Oversight Committee Chairman Barry Loudermilk from Georgia said January 6th committee members may be held, may be referred to the DOJ for criminal prosecution after reports they had hid and destroyed crucial evidence. As we highlighted earlier, former Representative Liz Cheney and the January 6th committee members hid evidence that exonerated former President Donald Trump after he called for 10,000 National Guard troops to be deployed at the U.S. Capitol building. The January 6th committee members were warned to reserve all the evidence by then incoming Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy. Loudermilk told Just the News that prosecutions may be in the cards. The House Republican leading the current review of security and intelligence failures during the 2021 Capitol riot put former lawmakers and staff on the now-defunct Democrat-run January 6th committee on notice Wednesday that he may make referrals for criminal obstruction or House ethics violations. As far as holding people accountable, Loudermilk said, yes, they should be. But I think that's going to be a little while ways down the road, because there's too much more information that we need to get. So the investigation continues, okay, and it needs to continue, but we're going to have to wait till next year to do anything about it. And then one last January 6th story, appeals court denies Peter Navarro bid to delay jail term. And this, again, is a selective persecution, not prosecution, right, of Trump allies, Trump supporters. And, go back to Hillary Clinton, go back to Obama and his campaign, and nobody that, Holder, the Attorney General under Obama, refused to testify in front of Congress and denied a subpoena. Nothing happened to him. Oh, but Peter Navarro, we're going to teach you a lesson. So here it comes. Former President Trump White House aide Peter Navarro bid to delay his prison sentence as he appealed his conviction was rejected on March 14th by a federal court. Mr. Navarro was convicted in 2023 of contempt of Congress for defying a subpoena from the House January 6th Select Committee, is slated to report to prison on March 19th. His bid to stay out of prison while he appeals his conviction was turned down initially in February, and then that was upheld by the appeals court. So Peter Navarro is trying to appeal his conviction, and they're saying, yeah, well, you got to do it from prison. Okay, that's what we're facing, folks, a tyrannical state. And that's why this show is about protecting and defending our individual freedom, liberty, and prosperity. We are fighting state control. We are fighting tyranny. This battle is for us to remain as individuals, to make our own decisions about our lives and not be ruled over by a tyrannical government. Peter Navarro is being attacked by a tyrannical government. That's just the bottom line. Okay, let's get on with the news of the week. No big surprise here. Trump and Biden clinch party nominations, and they are, the presumptive nominees. Well, it looks now like it will be a rematch of 2020 between Trump and Biden. Questions still linger about Biden making it to the November election. So basically, we got to the point where both Trump and Biden, they refused to let RFK on the ballot to challenge him, right? They rigged their primaries. The Democrats are not Democrats, folks. If you think you're a Democrat, you're a fool, because there is no Democrat Party. They're controlled by the Marxists and socialists and being used to destroy our nation. And that's why they don't have elections. The Democratic primary is about as fair of an election as Vladimir Putin's election coming up, which there's a lot of scoffing about that, why do they even hold the elections? Well, why have a Democratic primary? Because there's no competition. The party, quote unquote, comrade, picks Biden. Trump had a bunch of competitors, which he once again defeated to get the nomination. So it's a day and night difference. But there's still major questions of whether Biden can make it to November for multiple reasons, his health being the biggest one, the most obvious one, but also simply because he's probably going to be impeached. And we'll talk more about some of that coming up. So they're going to be the nominees. But this is causing a problem for us, all right? And the problem has to do with voter turnout in the primaries now that Trump has won the endorsement. So, I'm trying to push people, and I've talked to you about this, that you got to understand, you got to go and vote in your primary, even though Trump has already won the nomination. You can't say, well, I'll just wait till November, because there's important down-ticket races that we've got to win. And the Democrats are trying to interfere. In states like Ohio, there's 20 states where you can cross over and vote in the Republican primary. And the Dems are planning to do that. So now I'm going to explain to you why this is important to you, right? This show is about protecting and defending your individual freedom, liberty, and prosperity. And all the stories in it are news pieces, information that do that. This is happening in Ohio, but it affects all of you. Now, I have to say, and I talked at the beginning of this podcast, how horrific, I don't know what other word to use, this election season has been in Ohio. The lies, they're just the total lies that are being told on Republican versus Republican violence, literally, it's just insane. Yesterday, it was all I could do to keep my sanity. Nan had to come in and calm me down, because all I got all day yesterday was big money special interests buying TV ads, mailers, doing all kinds of things against our MAGA candidates who don't have the institutional money, just making up things, just literally making up things, knowing they don't have the money to defend themselves, okay? So I want to share with you this story to put it in perspective. Associated Press debunks its own smear of Trump-backed Bernie Moreno days before the Ohio election. The Associated Press ran a tawdry smear piece on Thursday attacking leading Ohio Senate candidate Bernie Moreno, despite debunking the allegations within its own story and withholding critical evidence, further eroding the tale's validity. Okay? The hit piece involved the existence of a 2008 profile on a casual sexual encounters website called Adult Friend Finder. That profile, made public through a data breach of the website, was created using a company email used on Moreno-owned company's website and literature. The AP story says a caption on the photoless profile, which it notes was last accessed about 6 hours after it was created, says, "Looking for young guys to have fun with while traveling." So they're basically trying to accuse Bernie Moreno, who is married for 30 years and has 4 children, of being gay, okay? Without any evidence. The AP ran the hit piece questioning Moreno's potential involvement despite a sworn statement from a former intern for Moreno's company that the intern created the profile as a juvenile prank using an email address managed by staff, including interns. The AP also, by its own admission, lacked evidence linking Moreno to the account. Additionally, the AP excluded critical evidence it possessed presented by Moreno's attorneys. The email address in question was not Bernie Moreno's personal email address, but rather an email address that appeared on company websites and literature that was managed by staff. Nothing to see here. Nothing to see here. But, we got to win. So we've got to smear you with lies. So now we've got this ad running here in Ohio. This is really interesting. Listen to this.
MAGA Republican Bernie Moreno is too conservative for Ohio. In Washington, Moreno would do Donald Trump's bidding. That's why Trump endorsed Moreno, calling him exactly the type of MAGA fighter that we need in the United States Senate. Moreno would lead the charge to enact Trump's MAGA agenda to repeal Obamacare and institute a national ban on abortion. Donald Trump needs Bernie Moreno. Ohio doesn't. Duty and Country is responsible for the content of this ad.
Okay, so now there's these ads. I mean, they're not spending a few bucks. They're spending hundreds of thousands, if not millions, on this ad. Okay, now in your classic, some of you older people remember the magazine Spy versus Spy. Okay, which is a hilarious magazine from probably the 60s or 70s. Can't remember, but half the people are saying, oh, this ad really is trying to get MAGA people to vote for Bernie Moreno, okay? And then the other people are saying, no, this is an ad that's trying to get the Democrats and the independent Trump haters to come out and vote against Moreno, right? Spy versus spy. What is it really? Well, here's the bottom line, folks. This is where you come in. This is what's going on. Rhinos and Dems are trying to build an anti-Trump Senate firewall in Ohio. All right? So you've heard, we've talked all about lawfare. We've talked about how they're going to stop Trump with any means possible. Okay? But now the lawfare is failing. Trump is doing great. I mean, I think the documents case in Florida is going to end up being dismissed. We'll talk about Fannie Willis in a little bit, about how that whole, Georgia, RICO case is falling apart. The January 6th case in D.C. is delayed and probably won't happen at all, probably. Okay? So the lawfare is failing. So what do they do next? Now, we know that we can't just elect Trump. We have to keep the House, get a bigger margin, and then win the Senate. In Ohio, it's one of the top seats. Sherrod Brown, our Marxist commie, his wife Connie Brown is a total card-carrying commie. We got to beat him, and if we do, that's a key seat in us taking control of the Senate. So what are they doing, right? And remember, I said rhinos and Dems are trying to build an anti-Trump Senate firewall in Ohio. So listen to this. With their backs to the wall and lawfare failing, rhinos and Dems coordinate to build an anti-Trump, anti-MAGA Senate firewall in the Ohio primary election. So it's all out there in the open. The battle lines are drawn right here in Ohio as the dying Republican name-only establishment that has sold out the American people and Ohio middle class for decades are going to make their stand against the Trump Make America Great Again party base for control of the Republican Party and the U.S. government. With Trump now taking total control of the Republican National Committee and MAGA making gains in the Ohio Republican Party State Central Committee, the rhinos are going all in to protect their power and privilege and to defeat the evil Trump and continue to stop the America First agenda in the U.S. Senate. After former U.S. Senator Rob Portman and current Governor Mike DeWine have endorsed Dolan, today we will probably see the trifecta with the disgusting anti-Trump rhino traitor and loser John Kasich endorsing Matt Dolan for Senate. See this for what it is. These Dolan endorsements are calling for the never-Trump college-educated, indoctrinated elites who are getting rich selling out the working class in America, working class American people, to come out and vote next Tuesday in the Republican primary for Dolan. It's also a call for the Democrats who elected Portman and DeWine and Kasich to once again cross over into the Republican primary election and vote for Matt Dolan to make sure the November race in Ohio for Senate is a win-win for them by putting Marxist Sherrod Brown against the Portman-like Dolan. They sure as hell don't want Trump supporter Bernie Moreno voting for the MAGA agenda in the U.S. Senate next year, which is exactly what we need. The Rhino Uniparty doesn't want to take control of the U.S. Senate to help Trump right? So, West Virginia is going to turn, Manchin's not running. It's going to turn red. That's the 50th vote. The 51st is either going to be Ohio or Arizona or Montana. The odds are very good we're going to take over the Senate. But what's going to happen? They don't want to take over control of the Senate to help Trump make America great. They want to take control of the Senate to stop Trump from draining the swamp, destroying the rule of law, restoring the rule of law, and restoring representative government. The rhinos are trying to build a firewall here in Ohio to stop Trump from implementing our America First agenda. So do you see how this affects all of you? This is it. Literally, this Tuesday, if MAGA voters don't turn out and dominate the Democrats in the Republican primary and elect Bernie Moreno, they're going to have a firewall in the Senate to stop our MAGA agenda, and Donald Trump is going to be fought tooth and nail. Now, today, this is Saturday, March 16th, Donald Trump is coming to Dayton, Ohio, to hold a big rally to support Bernie Moreno. And I think he's going to talk about this issue. So you should watch it on TV. But here's the dirty little secret that I'm trying to get out in Ohio, and those of you in other states need to understand this. Most people aren't registered Republicans or Democrats because the parties suck. Who wants to be part of a party that is as corrupt as both of these groups? I just told you about the horrific campaigns, Republicans versus Republicans in the primary, that is just filled with lies. Why? Power and money. So what's the deal? Well, in Ohio, there's 8.2 million registered voters. There's about 1.2 people who could register who don't. That's another story. But of the 8.2 registered voters, only 1 million are Republicans, and about 864,000 are Democrats. Seriously, in 2020, 3.2 million people in Ohio voted for Donald Trump. 2.2 million, or two-thirds of them, were independent. Here's the problem. Independent voters don't think they can vote in the Republican Party primary because they're not Republicans. But the Democrats sure as hell don't have any problem doing that, do they? I showed you the story on our website about South Carolina, where 15% of the Republicans voting in the primary, quote, of the people voting in the Republican primary, were Democrats. So the Democrats know, you just show up at your polling location in Ohio and say, give me a Republican ballot, and you can vote for Matt Dolan to hedge your bet against Sherrod Brown. What MAGA voters need to understand, Ohio MAGA voters, even if you're not a registered Republican, you must show up on Tuesday, March 19th, to vote for Trump, who's going to win, and he's basically unopposed, but to vote for Bernie Moreno, and then down ticket for people like Reggie Stolfus in the Ohio 6 for Congress, and Charles Tassel in the Ohio 2nd. Go to our website at freedomforallpac.org to find out our federal candidates, and then down ticket to vote for state House and Senate candidates who are MAGA. And even for county commissioners and sheriffs, for God's sake. Because if Trump is going to do what he says he's going to do, which he usually does, is we're going to round up these 10 million illegal aliens and deport them. Well, how are you going to do that if you don't have support at the local and state level? MAGA, independent MAGA voters, listen to me. Just go to your local poll on Tuesday, March 19th, and say, give me a Republican ballot to defend our nation and to defend President Trump and to make sure they don't build this firewall to stop us a year from now from doing what we got to do. Does that make sense? I hope so. And for the rest of you out there, the same thing applies. If you have a primary still coming up, don't not vote because Trump already won. That's not the right answer. I hope this is helping you guys decide and see what the challenge is. So as we try to fight through this lawfare and dirty tricks, I talked to you last week about the RNC being taken over by Trump, and you should follow this because They ain't messing around, folks. I'm serious. There's been a lot of naysayers and critics saying, oh, the RNC, they can't do anything. They fired a bunch of employees this week. They're hiring new people, and they're taking action. And here's an example. Michigan has more registered voters than eligible citizens in 53 counties, says RNC lawsuit. The Republican National Committee filed a lawsuit Wednesday against Michigan Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson, alleging the state's voter rolls are inflated with ineligible voters. The suit claims that 53 of the state's 83 counties have more registered voters than they do residents who are eligible to vote. 23 other counties also allegedly have suspiciously high voter registration rates of 90% or more, which does not comport with a nationwide voter registration rate, according to the suit. The RNC sent a letter to Benson in December notifying the state of 78 counties that are in violation of Section 8 and formally requests that they correct the violations within 90 days. Section 8 of the National Voter Registration Act requires states to maintain accurate voter registration rolls and to have a program in place that works to remove ineligible voters from the rolls in instances of death or moving out of state or address change. Benson failed to clean the state's voter rolls, according to the RNC, which alleged that retaining voter rolls bloated with ineligible voters harms the electoral process, heightens the risk of election fraud, and undermines public confidence in the elections. That's correct. That's a big step. Now, again, it's not the whole step, certainly in Michigan, where it's going to be really tough because they're still going to cheat like hell, okay? But it's doing things now in March, not after the election. It's going to matter. And the RNC is committed to that. So this is a good sign and some all of you should be working on and being involved in and supporting in your area, because we got to fight the fight everywhere we can. And to have the RNC involved now, it's just terrific. It's just a great break. So then I mentioned this story before, but I'm happy to see that someone is suing. And this is where the Biden administration, Kamala Harris, actually held a press conference saying, oh, we're going to use work study students to go out and register voters. Oh, what a great idea. Yeah, not. All right. But here's the problem. This is a perfect example of the left's constant use of our taxpayer dollars against us and the fact that the Republicans in Congress, the Republicans in Congress, do nothing to stop them, so outside groups have to do it. I said last week, and you should talk to your congressman about this. If the UN is funding the border crossers, the House can defund the $11 billion that goes to the UN. If the Biden regime is misusing work study federal dollars to register their voters to win the election, the House can defund the entire work study program and they won't have any money. But do they do that? Oh no, they just pass that horrific budget, quote unquote, budget, the spending spree last week and didn't cut anything. Okay? Well, they cut some money from the FBI stuff. It's not they didn't cut anything. They didn't do what they needed to protect our nation, okay? So what happens? This is a story you can see at WeThePeopleConvention.org. Nonpartisan government watchdog Protect the Public's Trust initiated legal action against the U.S. Department of Education on Wednesday, alleging the department knowingly failed to respond to a Freedom of Information request. The group has requested documents related to the Biden government's decision allowing the use of federal work study program funds for election related activities. In the initial FOIA request made about 1.5 years ago, the watchdog group questioned the Biden Education Department's decision allowing federal work study funds for activities such as broad-based get out the vote, voter registration, provide voter assistance at polling places or through a voter hotline or serving as a poll worker. Critics allege the Biden government's policy change regarding work study funds potentially breaches federal law. Yeah. So why is this group having to do this? And that's all I'm saying to you is that why do we have to fight this with outside groups when we're supposed to have representation in Congress? But this is what I'm telling you. The left is weaponizing the federal government, all the agencies, to use our money to register people to vote against us and give them more money. You see that? That's why we got to fight. That's why your congressmen have to fight. Okay? So then, you know, we didn't talk about the State of the Union because I told you I didn't care. I didn't watch it. It was meaningless. But one of the things that happened in the State of the Union last week is Biden says the rich need to pay their fair share of taxes, right? That total, you know, bogus claim that the left always makes. While he and Hunter paid no taxes on the millions they took in bribes, right? How's that for hypocritical? The defendant, Hunter Biden, willfully failed to pay his 2016, 2017, 2018, and 2019 taxes, despite having access to funds to pay for some or all of these taxes. Federal prosecutors who charge Hunter Biden with tax evasion are mounting their strongest counterattack yet on the president's son and his criticism of the case, suggesting that he has engaged in a conspiracy theory in court and clearly cheated on taxes even after achieving sobriety. Okay, so this is the part of the defense that Hunter Biden's team is trying to put forward, and they're just being rejected. The federal court filing that special counsel David Weiss and his deputy Leo Weiss filed late Friday made clear that they don't intend to yield to Hunter Biden or his lawyers on the narrative in the court of public opinion or their versions of facts in a case that threatens to send the first son to prison for as many as 17 years if convicted. Yeah, we'll see how that goes, because you know what's going to happen. Joe Biden will pardon his son before he's either impeached, thrown out, or just, you know, loses the election. In recent weeks, Biden's defense team has suggested Weiss' prosecution was prompted by pressure from congressional Republicans and ex-president Donald Trump, and on that basis filed a series of motions to dismiss the charges. So, oh no, this, you know, I didn't do anything, right? But you know, you're just doing this for political reasons, which again is the left doing exactly what they accusing you of, exactly what they're doing, right? It's just outrageous. But the good news is, for once, this federal prosecutor isn't falling for it. The federal prosecutors filed back on both claims, filing an opposition to Biden's motion, providing evidence that Hunter Biden's tax evasion persisted even after he achieved sobriety, and alleged in including many willful acts during the four-year scheme. In the filing, the prosecutor told the court that assertions made by the Biden's lawyers were offering no realities or facts to the court. The bottom line is, he spent millions of dollars on his extravagant lifestyle rather than paying his tax bill in 2018. He stopped paying his outstanding overdue taxes for the year 2015, and he just is a tax cheat. And where is Joe Biden? What about all this money that Joe Biden got? He's a tax cheat too. They're not even talking to him about that. So, you know, here's what they are talking about, though. Evidence has come up that Hunter Biden and partners aided Chinese bid to corner nuclear energy market with U.S. tech. This is from Just the News. Detailed plans obtained by congressional investigators show Hunter Biden sought to help CEFC China Energy buy Westinghouse, the premier maker of U.S. nuclear reactors. While his father was still vice president, Hunter Biden and his business partners tried unsuccessfully to help a Chinese energy firm acquire one of the United States' premier nuclear technology companies in a secret attempt to control the global market for nuclear manufacturing, according to new evidence turned over to Congress in President Joe Biden's impeachment inquiry. The evidence, which includes a detailed strategy memo, shows Hunter Biden was directly involved in emails and correspondence on the project in 2016, and that the goal was to exploit the future first son's access to his father and to make Washington and Beijing comfortable with a potentially controversial deal, and then to shield the acquisition of Westinghouse by China, CFC Energy, behind intermediaries. In other words, he was working with the communist Chinese to control nuclear power manufacturing by being allowed to buy Westinghouse, which is illegal under U.S. law, using Joe Biden. Right? That's called treason. Anywhere else, that's called treason. But this is the level of the, you know, of the corruption that Joe Biden, who is sitting in the White House, undertook. Okay? Hunter Biden has no ability to talk to China about doing this without Joe Biden's help, right? So it's just amazing to me that we keep acting like, you know, there's still some doubt about whether Joe Biden did this or did that. It's just not true. And last week we talked to you about, the things that China's doing, that they funded the entire transgender agenda here in the United States to do what? Destroy our families. That they bought this food plant, Smithfield Foods, and they're using our food to feed the Chinese soldiers. We talked about the cranes at the ports in the U.S. having spy cameras on them. So I was really happy to see this story this week. Government-wide investigation into CCP subversion of the U.S. launched by House panel. Here, it's only about 20 years too late, but here's the story. Under the leadership of Chair James Comer, the House Oversight Committee begins a thorough investigation into the Chinese Communist Party's efforts to infiltrate and influence every sector of the United States. House Oversight Committee Chair John Comer announced on Thursday the commencement of a government-wide inquiry into the Chinese Communist Party's ongoing efforts to target, influence, and infiltrate every sector and community in the United States. The probe is inspired by the revelations in Peter Schweizer's new book, Blood Money, with the powerful, Why the Powerful Turn a Blind Eye While China Kills Americans. We showed you that book last week. We talked about it because the story about the Chinese billionaires funding the entire U.S. trans lie, okay, was in that book. Now, hey, Republicans can read. They're basing this investigation on this book, which quickly ascended to the number one position on the New York Times bestseller list following its publication by HarperCollins. The book Blood Money has unveiled several critical insights, including how the Biden family allegedly received $5 million from the business associates of the White Wolf, a leader of gang implicated in the narcotics trade, as detailed here. Furthermore, the book exposes China's involvement in the North American fentanyl crisis and reveals how the CCP uses TikTok as the modern-day Trojan horse to disseminate propaganda within the United States. We'll talk about TikTok in the second half of the show. I'm thrilled that Chairman Comer is launching a major investigation on this. Schweizer, president of the Government Accountability Institute and a Breitbart News senior contributor, told Breitbart News exclusively, "I look forward to helping the committee in their efforts. The investigation will require federal agencies to disclose measures being taken to counter the CCP's infiltration and influence across various sectors, including education, agriculture, critical infrastructure, research, energy, business, space, and technology." Oh, really? Yeah, they're not involved at all, right? Just in those areas. Wow. "Without firing a single bullet, the Chinese Communist Party is waging war against the U.S. by targeting, influencing, and infiltrating every economic sector and community in America," Comer stated, highlighting the broad scope and serious implications of the CCP's actions on U.S. national security and the lives of Americans. Hear, hear. That's why the flag is upside down, folks, because we're under attack by China. And until this is happening, no, everyone pretends it's not true. It is true. Good job, Chairman Comer. Let's do it, okay? Let's wrap it up. And so as far as wrapping it up goes, let's wrap up the first half of the show with this last story, which, breaking, judge rules in the Fannie Willis disqualification case, uproar begins. Okay? This has been a disgrace from the beginning. This involves the RICO case in Georgia that claims that Trump and several others, you know, attorneys and other qualified people, broke the law by challenging the Georgia election, which clearly was illegitimate. Okay? This is a complete scam. And Fannie Willis is a dumb DEI hire who completely has screwed this up by having an affair with the guy she hired to prosecute Trump in this RICO case by grossly overpaying him, like double the normally hourly rate. And oh, by the way, yeah, Fannie Willis met with the January 6th committee. and got materials. And then her lover met with the White House. And we talked last week about the fact that they had the White House planted a guy on her staff who's responsible for creating this whole charade of a case. It's called election interference, and it's tied directly to the White House, and that's called an impeachable offense, okay? But back to this ruling, we knew it was going to be a piece of garbage, and it ended up being a breach of garters. It basically ends up saying, Judge Scott McAfee has delivered his ruling on whether to disqualify Fannie Willis from her own prosecution of Donald Trump in Fulton County, Georgia. According to the judge, Willis can remain on the case as long as her lover is fired. Okay? That's bogus. That's absolutely bogus. As one guy on Twitter said, so if I have this right, Fulton County Judge Scott McAfee decided to pull a James Comey, Robert Mueller, and Robert Hur, saying, while ruling saying Fannie Willis and Nathan Wade are guilty as hell, have no ethics, and aren't good role models, but Fannie can stay if he leaves. There's more trouble for her coming down the road. I don't know. This is what it says at the end of this article. I think this is important for you guys. Despite some proclamations by hopeful people on the right, that would be me, the idea that these proceedings could lead to the case being dismissed was never realistic. That wasn't an outcome on the table. And had Willis been removed, the case would have continued. I don't know about that. But anyway, her staying as the face of the prosecution after taking this blow is probably the best case scenario for the Trump defense. Had Willis been booted, it would have been embarrassing for her, but it would have possibly allowed someone more qualified to take over. I guess you can make that case, but this is still wrong. The judge is, again, he's running for re-election. Oh, by the way, small thing. The judge that just made this ruling to let Fannie stay on the case, yeah, he donated to her election campaign when she ran in 2020. Okay? There you go. We will not have America again until the rule of law is restored and there is equal justice under the law. This ain't that. Right? We can agree on that. All right, we're going to take a break for a few messages, and then we'll come back to the second half of the show. You've been watching the We the People Convention News and Opinion Podcast, and my name is Tom Zawistowski.
The We the People Convention News and Opinion Radio Program is paid for by donors like you. You can donate to the We the People Convention and support our cause by going to wethepeopleconvention.org or by sending your check in any amount to We the People Convention, P.O. Box 6211, Akron, Ohio, 44312.
When you're playing a video, including our podcast, you'll see this little cloud button. And if you click it, it'll actually download the video to your hard disk. And this works on our podcast page as well. If you're playing our podcast, and it's going to be loud, so I won't play it for much, but there's our podcast playing, and you can see this little, you know, download button, okay? The other thing you got to notice on our podcast page is that there's a link here where you can send me a message about this podcast. Hey, it was great. Hey, I didn't like it. What, you know, something was wrong, or here's a correction, that kind of thing. You can use that link. And then these are the stories that I covered in this particular podcast. And you'll see there's links that go to the stories, to the articles that I used in reporting on that. So you can click on that. You'll also see that you can sign up for our emails and text messages, but you can also watch our podcast on Roku TV and on Amazon Fire TV. And these are the instructions for doing that. So this is all on our podcast page, right? Right on the front page where the yellow button was. So if you click there, you know, this is our podcast page. These are the instructions for watching on Roku TV or Amazon Fire. And I watch our podcast on TV. It just feels more comfortable. So you can do that. We're also on Rumble. If you go to Rumble, you should join Rumble. And, you know, it's Tom Z at WTPC. You'll see our podcast there. So you can get us a lot of different ways, including on Apple iTunes. And then this is an audio version of our podcast. If you click here, it'll just play the audio of the podcast. It will not, show you the video. So people can, listen to that while they're jogging or, working out, working in the yard, or just relaxing and just want to listen to the audio and not watch the video. And again, this is available on phone, on your iPad, on your laptop, on your computer, any way you want. And you can share, this, whatever you see. If you're on a page that you really like, and you see an article that you think, geez, I've got to share this article, with someone in my family, you can send them an email by clicking on the little envelope. You can post it on Parler or MeWe. And if you click on this, you get all kinds of options, where you can put it on Twitter or Facebook, whatever, which we don't support, but you can do whatever you want. So we ask that you share what you see on our We the People convention site, and that you get more people to look at it, because that's the whole idea here, to help educate people, inform them. And then, as I said before, Link, we're not just about talk, we're about action. And in my podcast every week, which is published every Saturday, so if you the new podcast usually comes out every Saturday, and in that podcast, I will ask you to do certain things that will help protect and defend your individual freedom, liberty, and prosperity. So that's the We the People Convention website. Come back often, use it to be formed, be informed, and share it with others. Thanks a lot.
All right. And thank you, all of you who donate to the program. But remember, that's not the only thing. If you can't donate, and if you do donate, be sure to share the podcast so that others can, be informed, and also to take actions that we suggest, like, what we said about telling your congressman to defund the work study program so they can't use it to cheat, right? So that's important. I also just, wanted to remind you that we do, we are on Twitter, and we would ask that you are on Twitter and social. It's Tom Z, WTPC. Please follow us there and repost our things. We also need you would like you to download our phone app. Just go to wethepeopleconvention.org, and there's a button right on the front page that tells you how to download our phone app so that we can send you notifications through the phone app, which don't cost us any money. And it's a big help to us. And we have several thousand people using the phone app now. We'd like several thousand more. So please do that. I also did, just before I start the second half of the show, I just want to say to all of you who have the courage to run for office, I can't thank you enough. And if you know somebody that's running for office, just call them up today and say, you know what? I want to thank you. Because, folks, I don't know how we're going to keep getting people to run for office when it is such a bloody cesspool. I just don't know how you're going to do it. It's just horrific. We take good people and allow them to get viciously attacked, their family attacked, their businesses attacked. For what? For running for office? How dare you run against the establishment, say the big moneyed special interest funders, right? God, give them a hug. Thank them. I know you work for them and stuff and you donate to them, but just thank them, because I don't know how we're going to keep recruiting people. It's so horrible. I mean, Just want to share that with you. So speaking of horrible, I thought this is really horrible, and I don't think it's getting enough coverage, okay? So I want to, really put this on our website. U.S. government, our government, not our government, the U.S. government, which is controlled by the Marxist left, the anti-capitalist, anti-democratic left, is attempting to overthrow the Israeli government. This is no joke. The U.S. government, because they can't get their way. They're trying to tell Israel, you must do a ceasefire. You must not invade here. You must do this. How dare they? Who the hell are you? The article says, what right does the U.S. government have to attempt to overthrow the duly elected president of Israel and his government? The answer is none. How the hell dare you? And so it really kind of took off with this unbelievable video by Chuck Schumer this week that is a disgrace, a disgrace. Watch this.
As a lifelong supporter of Israel, it has become clear to me the Netanyahu coalition no longer fits the needs of Israel after October 7th. The world has changed radically since then, and the Israeli people are being stifled right now by a governing vision that is stuck in the past. Nobody expects Prime Minister Netanyahu to do the things that must be done to break the cycle of violence, to preserve Israel's credibility on the world stage, and to work towards a two-state solution. If he were to disavow Ministers Smotrich and Ben-Gvir and kick them out of his government governing coalition, that would be a real meaningful step forward. But regrettably, there's no reason to believe Prime Minister Netanyahu would do that. He won't disavow Ministers Smotrich and Ben-Gvir in their calls for Israelis to drive Palestinians out of Gaza and the West Bank. He won't commit to a military operation in Rafah that prioritizes protecting civilian life. He won't engage responsibly in discussions about a day-after plan for Gaza and a longer-term pathway to peace.
So Schumer made these statements after a U.S. intelligence assessment concluded that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's rule is vulnerable. A senior Israeli official suggested Washington was attempting to overthrow the war government in Tel Aviv. President Joe Biden has grown increasingly critical of his longtime friend Netanyahu. Yeah, longtime friend, my butt. While the White House has sought to distinguish between support for Israel and its leader, the administration says it will not reduce support for Tel Aviv. How can you trust someone who attacks you publicly and says you should be thrown out? A senior Israeli official slammed the Biden administration in remarks to the Jerusalem Post, saying, "We expect our friends to act to overthrow the terror regime of Hamas and not the elected government of Israel." No kidding. They added that Israeli citizens and not anyone else elect the prime minister. Israel is not a protectorate of the U.S., but an independent and democratic country whose citizens are the ones who choose the government. Okay? The statement followed the annual threat assessment compiled by U.S. intelligence agencies who have proven to be not too damn intelligent when looking at Ukraine and letting the war in the Middle East break out, and in looking at China, not too intelligent. But these experts, these Marxists who hate democratic countries and capitalism, you know, said Netanyahu's viability as a leader, as well as his governing coalition of far-right and unorthodox parties that pursued hardline policies on Palestine and security issues, may be in jeopardy. Well, why would you call them far-right when they're not far-right? They call you and me far-right. We're not far-right. We're in the center. We're where America is. But you're far-right, according to these intelligence experts, right? So they should be overthrown. While Netanyahu may not be personally popular among Israelis, his policies are. Israel repeatedly shows historical low confidence in the prime minister. At the same time, it's also clear that the general public in Israel supports Netanyahu's policies. About two-thirds, 63% of the Jewish public, do not support Israel agreeing in principle to an independent and demilitarized Palestinian state. This fictional two-state solution that they could have had years ago when Yasser Arafat was giving it at Camp David and he turned it down, because the goal isn't to have a state for Palestine. The goal is to kill the Jews. And the Biden administration is aiding the people who want to kill the Jews. Stay out of Israel's business. Damn it. You have no right. We have no right. And so I ask, first ask of the show, really, for you to call the White House and say, stay out of Israel's business, because the squad and the leftists in the United States are organizing all these, you know, protests to try to intimidate the Biden White House, and they're withholding votes in Michigan, right? If you don't criticize Israel and stop funding them and demand a ceasefire, why? So Hamas won't get wiped out, which they deserve to be, because they're like Al-Qaeda. Hamas needs to be wiped off the face of the earth. And Israel is doing that, and they should do that, or they will never be safe. If you let, it's like cancer cells. If you let any of the Hamas leadership survive, they will just come back to attack you, cut babies' heads off with shovels, rape and then murder women in front of their families. That's who Hamas is. We don't support that. We support Israel. And they're not committing genocide. They're defending their people. And we should stand with them. So then this other story comes up, and again, you know, and you're just trying to figure out where, you know, what do you do with these foreign countries? Because I'm worried as heck about what's going on in Canada. Canadian law endorsed by Trudeau government could imprison people for life for speech crimes. For speech crimes. Folks, this is more Orwellian than the book 1984. This is insanity. And the Trudeau government is pushing this. I just talked about genocide and how the Palestinians and the left are claiming that Israel's committing genocide when they're not. They're not trying to wipe out the Arab race or the Arab people like the Arabs are trying to wipe out Israelis. They're trying to destroy a military force, a terrorist group that's attacking them. But get this. If you took what I just said about Israel should wipe Hamas out and posted that in a Facebook post or, you know, Instagram or whatever they use in Canada, under this new law, you who posted what I said could be put in prison for life. For life. Are you kidding me? I wish I was kidding you, but it gets worse. It gets worse. This is from a website called thenaturalnews.com, which is pretty deep, cutting-edge news stories, but this is right up their alley. Pre-crime is here. Proposed Canadian bill criminalizes merely thinking about posting hate speech. Now, again, what I just said to you is if you support genocide, they can put you in prison for life, but you have to post that, right? It goes further. A new proposed bill recently presented to the Canadian Parliament would allow people to report so-called hate speech online before it ever happens. The proposed hate speech law, Bill C-36, allows Canadians to take another person to court if they feel like they might post something hateful online. According to the proposed legislation, Canadians will be encouraged, to report anybody to the authorities. Those who have reports filed against them will then be taken to court and potentially penalized before they even post any so-called hate speech online if there is sufficient evidence to suggest that they have hateful motives. Oh, no, there won't be any abuse of this, right? You can call this agency and say, Tom Zawistowski is going to post something hateful online with no evidence, and they make me come in and prove I'm innocent, right? What's the law? Innocent until proven guilty? Yeah, here in the United States, the Biden regime is saying you're guilty and you can't prove your innocence because we're going to try you in a kangaroo court. Well, that's what the socialists and Marxists want. That was Stalin, Lenin, that was Mao, okay? That's what they did. That's what Canada's trying to do. You can be accused and you're guilty till you prove you're innocent. And oh yeah, we decide whether you're innocent or not. Folks, I'm telling you, you know, we sanction other companies that commit human rights violations, right? China, you know, with the slaves they've got, the Uyghurs, I guess their name is, you know, that are producing goods that are slaves, that, you know, we sanction Russia and for their violations, sometimes Iran when Trump's president. I think when Trump becomes president, we got to think about what we're going to do to sanction the Trudeau government, because we don't want this on our border. This is a threat to us. And I just said, stay out of Israel's business because they're an ally. But Israel isn't against our values. Canada? Yeah, I think they are. I think they are. So be careful. Keep an eye on what's going on there because it's coming to the whole world, not just here, to the whole world. That's what you and I are fighting to defend against. Individual freedom, liberty, and prosperity versus tyranny, government tyranny. That's what we're fighting. So this, you know, this show is about individual freedom, liberty, and prosperity. And part of that is knowing the truth about what's going on. Now, Bidenflation is even worse than you think because the media and the Biden people in an election year are trying to convince you that inflation is way down and things are much better and you don't realize how good things are. Yeah, well, we do realize, but maybe not as much as you think. So I'm going to put it in context. It doesn't take a master's degree in economics to understand that prices are up in every sector of the economy. The economy under Joe Biden is nickel and diming us at every turn, and Americans can see past the smoke and mirrors that the White House and media is using to try to convince us that everything is fine, don't you know? It's all just fine. The federal government measure of price index, price increases, the consumer price index, has consistently shown that inflation isn't going away. The most recent CPI report indicates a 3.2% increase in prices from February 2023 to February 24. That's a significant increase, but it only shows the increase over a rolling 12 months. To get a clearer picture of what Biden inflation looks like, we need to compare prices between now and when Trump was president. How, you know, for the whole time that Biden has been in office. And when you do that, it basically comes out to a whopping 18%. Inflation is up 18% since Biden's been president. So things you buy cost you 18% more. Are your wages up 18%? We're on Social Security. Our Social Security sure isn't up 18%. So we're losing. Our standard of living is being reduced because our income can't keep up with inflation. And this is caused by the Biden government's decisions to stop U.S. energy, for instance. A big driver of inflation is higher energy prices. They wanted you to have higher energy prices. We have higher energy prices, and that's what's hurting you. So here's the real numbers. Food prices increased by 20.6% under Biden in the last 3 years. Energy prices increased by 29.6%. Your heating, natural gas, your fuel, electric bills, 29.6%. The core CPI measures the price increases for all items excluding food and energy. Isn't that convenient that the government's CPI index excludes the two most important things, food and energy, from their index? And even still, inflation is up 16.5%. Okay? It's horrible. It's horrible. And so you got to plan that if we don't elect Donald Trump and reverse this war on us, war on America. And I'm going to do a story later in here. We're talking about how they're driving people to government dependence, right? That's what they're trying to do here. We're going to be slaves. There will be no individual freedom, liberty, and prosperity. We will be slaves of the state. And that's where this is all heading. Part of the reason for this is because we just don't do anything about things like this. Biden hides public records showing how much taxpayers are paying unions. The federal government pays more than $100 million, folks, $100 million of our money to employees who aren't doing their actual government jobs, but rather are working for unions represent government employees against management, with taxpayers essentially funding both sides of the bargaining table. For decades, the government has tracked and reported those figures, but the Biden administration has removed the reports because they don't want you to know. Under the policy known as official time, hundreds of nominal government employees haven't done anything but full-time union work in years, yet remain on the federal payroll. Not only is the policy expensive to taxpayers, but it also props up the power of unions by subsidizing their activities, giving them resources even if employees don't support them enough to pay dues. Those unions fight against the firing of employees accused of misconduct and advocate for policies that sometimes pit the interests of employees over the interests of taxpayers, such as resisting a return to in-person work. Okay? So again, why don't we have Congress pass a law that says that's illegal? We've met the enemy. It's us. It's the Republicans. All this has been done by men and can be undone by men and women. But we just don't do it. And now you're seeing things like DEI, right? Which is white hate. That's being infiltrating our through the government incentives is infiltrating big business. And what's the result? The result is serious endangerment of our lives. And what we're going to talk about next is the whole thing about Boeing. This is a Boeing whistleblower. His name was John Barnett. Deceased Boeing whistleblower John Barnett, okay, warned a friend before his death that if anything happens to me, it's not suicide. Barnett, 62, was found shot to death this week. The Charleston County Coroner's Office ruled his death self-inflicted. Barnett, who was involved in a lawsuit against Boeing, was previously employed at the company for 32 years and raised serious concerns about its production issues. According to his legal team, he faced a hostile work environment due to his outspoken concerns, particularly about safety problems with Boeing's flagship 787 Dreamliner model. He was in very good spirits and really looking forward to putting this phase of his life behind him and moving on. We don't see any indication he would take his own life. No one can believe it, said his attorney. A friend has now come forward with information suggesting that Barnett did not, in fact, take his own life. Barnett's friend Jennifer said she asked him if he was scared. According to Jennifer, he said, "No, I ain't scared, but if anything happens to me, it's not suicide. I know that he did not commit suicide. There's no way," Jennifer said. She claimed that someone did not like what he had to say and wanted to shut him up, adding, "That's why they make it look like suicide." Barnett's attorney remains steadfast in their pursuit of justice and plans to proceed with the case set for June. In light of these events and allegations, there appear to be more to the story than what the preliminary report suggests. Boeing has recently faced several scandals related to accidents involving its aircraft. A recent FAA audit uncovered dozens of issues with its production. Yeah, how about like landing gear falling off, doors blowing off? There's been accidents with Boeing aircraft like every week. You know why? Because you're not hiring qualified people anymore. You're not hiring qualified people. And I talked last week about like Intel is pulling out of the plant, the chip plant they want to build in Ohio, because the government is putting so many restrictions on them to hire people based on race and color of skin and gender descriptions and stuff like that. This is an intentional destruction of our country, and this whistleblower comes out to talk about it. Yeah, and he's dead. We're in a real war, folks, with real casualties. This is no joke. So then this story comes out. Tyson Foods wants to hire 52,000 asylum seekers for factory jobs. The food processing company wants to hire migrants who are arriving in New York for jobs Americans don't want. Don't you love that? Americans don't want these jobs, right? I'll address that in a second. New York City shelters are overwhelmed with migrants. They're illegal immigrants. They're not migrants, okay? And they're not just asylum seekers. That's just a lie. But that's how the story's playing out, okay? Many of them have arrived in Texas or Florida and then taken buses to New York, where shelter and benefits are guaranteed. However, the city is scrambling as the number continue to climb and the migrants, the illegals, look to build a new life in America, which includes housing and work. But for companies like Tyson Foods, struggling to fill unpopular jobs with a U.S. unemployment rate of 3.9%, this new population represents an alluring opportunity. The food processing company wants to hire 52,000 asylum seekers for factory jobs, offering a starting wage of $16.50 per hour, along with benefits. The company understands and is aware that these are jobs that many find unpleasant, such as washing meat, placing the cuts into trays. I don't find that unpleasant. It's just work. American farmers do this every day, okay? Final inspections for bones and packing meat, but believe this will help illegal immigrants, to start a life in America. For example, the company says it has allocated $1.5 million a year for legal aid services and will be providing its new employees with temporary housing, on-site childcare, transportation, a relocation stipend, and paid time off to attend court hearings and to adjust to their new home in America. Okay? Jobs Americans don't want. Why don't we want these jobs? $16.50 an hour? All these benefits? You don't want that job? You know why a lot of Americans don't want that job? Yeah, because if you're on welfare, if you take advantage of all the housing subsidies, food subsidies, SNAP, all the healthcare subsidies that the government, that the communist Marxists have put in there for our tax dollars. That's why we're $34 trillion in debt. The person on welfare in the United States today, a family of four can make $63,000 a year. You know how much $63,000 a year for a 40-hour work week, which nobody works, 52 works weeks a year? You know what that comes out to? That comes out to $30 an hour. Why would you take a job that pays $16.50 when the government's going to pay you $30 an hour? That's what's going on here, folks. Don't believe the lies. Americans will work. There's no incentive to work. And that's how they entrap you. That's how you become a slave, right? Tyson Foods, yeah, that's what they're doing. This is another article that affects you and all of us, and we need to be concerned about, and we've seen this coming for a long time. Commercial real estate shows signs of collapse. We saw it when COVID came, and all these big companies sent their employees to work from home, and then they found out, shazam, with a computer and an internet connection, there's really no reason for these employees to be in this very expensive downtown building where we're paying high rents, okay? And so we knew that they weren't coming back in big order. The United States economy may be seeing the start of a collapse in the commercial real estate sector, raising concerns about the potential impact on banks, your bank, and city budgets, your city. Elevated interest rates, slow corporate growth, and post-pandemic work-from-home trends have drastically reduced the office and retail space market. In San Francisco, a 20-story office tower that was purchased for $146 million 10 years ago was recently on the market for $80 million, almost 45% reduction in value. Similarly, in Chicago, a 200,000-square-foot office building sold for close to $90 million in 2004 was bought last month for just $20 million, a staggering 78% drop in cost. In Washington, D.C., a 12-story retail and office building just blocks from the White House sold for $36 million, a significant decline in value since its $100 million sale in 2018. This depreciation in commercial property values is severely affecting municipal budgets that rely heavily on the taxes attached to these commercial real estate properties. Financial shortfalls are becoming a reality for many cities as lower assessments of property values shrink tax income. Aaron Peskin, president of San Francisco Board of Supervisors, notes a potential $1 billion shortfall and San Francisco's $14 billion budget over the next few years, mainly due to decreased commercial real estate tax revenue. renewed banking crisis risk as well. Additionally, there are mounting concerns that a crisis in commercial real estate could cause cross-contamination in the U.S. banking sector, especially among small and regional banks. Since the middle of last year, small and mid-sized regional banks have increased holdings in commercial real estate despite the market cooling. If holding in commercial real estate increasingly becomes toxic, U.S. regulators could face a renewed banking crisis similar to the one experienced last year when several regional banks, including Silicon Valley Bank, experienced bank runs before ultimately being resized by Biden government as they collapsed or they were bailed out. In that story, which I'll link to in our podcast page where I link to all the articles, there's a chart in this story that shows that some of these banks, like the Bank of the Ozarks, has 68.8% of its assets in commercial real estate. How are they going to stay viable? That's going to affect you if you have your money in these banks, okay? And it's going to affect our ability to get loans, legitimate loans, for even home, you know, residential housing. This affects you. You need to know it's coming and adjust your thinking, because the world is not going to be the same as it was. It's going to change dramatically. Then this story came out, and you're going to love what I do with this. Dem resolution declares racism public health crisis. This is from our buddy Sherrod Brown, the communist I mentioned earlier in the podcast, who is, you know, we're trying to get rid of to take control of the Senate here in Ohio. And Sherrod Brown, Senator Sherrod Brown, Democrat of Ohio, has introduced a resolution designating racism as a public health crisis. The resolution, alleging health disparities and inequities across varying societal sectors, cites microaggressions and police violence, get this, among the progressives' obsessions. Brown's resolution notes that, now get this, Native Hawaiians and Pacific Islanders are 2.5 times more likely to die from diabetes than non-Hispanic white women. And Black, Hispanic, or Latino, Asian American, Native Hawaiians, Pacific Islanders, and Native American communities experience disproportionately high rates of COVID-19 infections. Now, this is because of racism, don't you see? But he does not explain how racism causes these maladies. It also asserts in his resolution, it also asserts, without supporting evidence, that inequities in health outcomes are exacerbated for people of color who are LGBTQXYZ, and blasts the United States as a country with a long-standing history and legacy of racism, mistreatment, and discrimination that has perpetuated health inequalities for members of racial and ethnic minority groups. Okay, but then he goes off the deep end. Brown, who recently hired a Black man to say the N-word for his latest audiobook, also suggests Black people are regularly confronted and threatened by armed citizens while performing everyday tasks such as jogging in their neighborhoods, driving, or playing in a park, and that these encounters can cause severe physical or psychological harm even when they are not fatal. This guy actually said that when the evidence shows that white people aren't just shooting Black people, but Black people are sure shooting white people, okay? And so I thought this, well, geez, if racism is a public health crisis, then you've got to stop the source, right? So you got to stop the source of racism. So I think we should declare it a public health crisis and basically declare that if you're a Democrat, you're the cause of the health crisis because you're proposing racism at every turn. And if we just tell the Democrats that, just like they do with, you know, the climate change, right, that if you have babies, you're killing the rest of the planet, okay, and you're committing an immoral act, I think we should say that racism is a health crisis, and that if you're a Democrat, you're causing that health crisis, and you need to stop being a Democrat. I think that would be a good reason to declare it a health crisis. What about you? Huh? Okay. Couple more stories, and then we'll wrap this up. What are the arguments for and against banning TikTok? So we mentioned TikTok earlier in the podcast. And so as you can tell from regular media, there's people on both sides of this. So what I did, I couldn't find a good article that kind of explained both sides of it. So I used this Perplexity AI. There's been a lot of publicity about this Perplexity idea, which I told you about, and I've been using that for like 6 months. And it's a great substitute. It's better than a Google search. And that's what they're doing. They're starting to hurt Google. All right. And it's called Perplexity, P-E-R-P-L-E-X-I-T-Y. And I basically said, give me the both sides of the argument for banning TikTok, for and against. And it came back with a very coherent statement, which I posted on the We the People Convention website, and basically said the arguments for banning TikTok is it's a national security threat because the Chinese are collecting all of our data. It's a precedent for foreign influence because there's evidence that they're influencing our youth to hate America. The Chinese are using it as a weapon, but that's no different than Facebook or Instagram. And it's there's bipartisan support. It was overwhelming. It's unbelievable. Like, so many Republicans voted for what the Biden regime wants to do, which is ban TikTok. Well, Donald Trump came out and said, I'm not so sure I'm in favor of banning TikTok because then more people will have to use Facebook. And he had a good point. And so this is the arguments against the bill banning TikTok. The free speech concerns. Once you start banning TikTok because it's owned by the Chinese, what's going to make you next year that you come out and say we're going to ban Twitter because they've got Saudi Arabian investors or something like that? Economic impact to creators and businesses. There's people that are invested in TikTok that create content on TikTok and make money. Is it fair to them to ban it? Questionable effectiveness and broad approach. You know, is this bill really going to stop the Chinese from using TikTok to spy on us? I don't think so. I don't think so at all. Okay, and potential legal challenges. The bill becomes law, it's likely to face legal challenges. There are questions about its constitutionality, particularly regarding the Bill of Attainder Clause, which prohibits legislation that punishes an individual or group without a trial. So that's the story. But the good thing about this article is then they put on this page, when Perplexity gives you an article, they give you the links to all the resources. So you can follow up and read every one of those things as to who said it and what's their case. So I want to share that with you. And now, basically, the question is, should we ban TikTok or not? My problem comes back to the fact that all social media has been proven to be evil and hurtful, bad for your mental health. And I think they should all be banned until they can figure out a way to make sure it doesn't kill you, because young girls are killing themselves over what people are doing to them on social media. That's a fact, okay? And so this isn't a solution to the problem, but you know what it is? Yeah, it's a way for the government to control speech. And so, I watch Kentucky Senator Rand Paul. He's with Tucker Carlson. He makes a compelling case. I don't like the government to be able to ban any business. He says, and I don't support the communist Chinese. And he says he's never been on TikTok. And I've never been on TikTok. And I suppose most of you haven't been on TikTok. But the bottom line is there's nefarious reasons behind this. And so I'm not for it. And you should make up your own decision. And then you should call your senator, because the House passed it. Now it's in the Senate. And Biden has said he will sign it if it's passed, which is another warning to me that it's not good for us. And so let's see what we can do in the Senate. But you should be concerned, because this is a free speech issue. Very, very important. Okay. Two more stories and we'll wrap it up. This is an important story because I've said to you all along, our fight is global. It's not just here. Okay. So this is a story about Portugal's election shows a surge in support for the far right, right? Again, we call it normalcy, reflecting a broader European trend. And so whoever talks about Portugal's elections, why is it important? Well, I'll explain that. And I love these articles. Portugal's far-right Chega party on Saturday received on Sunday received a surge of support in the country's final snap general election, reflecting a broader shift to the radical right across Europe. No, to reject the radical left, to normalcy, to individual freedom, liberty, and prosperity. When you read these articles, don't accept the propaganda. Portugal's center-right Democratic Alliance claimed victory in a vote, winning 79 seats in the country's 230-seat National Assembly, well short of the parliamentary majority. The incumbent center-left Socialist Party followed closely behind with 77 seats. The results, which saw the parliamentary representatives of the Chega Party quadruple to at least 48 lawmakers, gives the political right a combined majority. Okay? So again, coalition governments, when you have more than Republicans and Democrats, when you have multiple parties, there's coalition governments. I wish we had a third party. I wish we had coalition government, but we don't. But anyway, the party's political success reaffirms a political drift to the right across the continent. Observers have been closely monitoring the results of Portugal's elections as a potential bellwether ahead of European Parliament elections in June. Dozens of European countries are having elections in June, and the left and the World Economic Forum, and all these globalists are scared to death because the lefties are being thrown out. Okay, they're being thrown out, and they're looking at Portugal as a bellwether. Portugal's election was held on Sunday following the abrupt resignation of Socialist Prime Minister António Costa in November amid a corruption investigation. Oh yeah, don't you love it? Vincent Valletem, a political scientist at the University of Oxford in England, describes the vote as somewhat of a defining moment for the country. In a post on social media, the Portuguese election yesterday highlights a common trend. Support for the far right often grows very fast. The recent surge in support for far right, normal people parties, such as Portugal's Chega, Greece's Golden Dawn, France's National Front, and Spain's Vox, could be at least partially be explained by a process of normalization, according to Valentine. The outcome means Chega will play an influential role in the formation of a new conservative government. So basically, he said the truth out loud. Normalization. None of this boys or girls. None of this DEI. You're born a racist. You're born, if you're white, you're an oppressor. None of this nonsense. Normalization means that, oh yeah, farmers can farm. That there is no climate change that's going to destroy the planet. That's normalized. That's what's happening. You're part of it. Remember, Brexit happened before Trump. Now, this is happening over the globe, and our electing Trump is key to that. Okay? It's key to that. Now, one last story, because I think this is very important. Women athletes suing NCAA over transgender policy, allowing men in women's sports. 16 athletes have filed a lawsuit against the NCAA alleging the organization's transgender participation policy serially violated Title IX in 2022 when it allowed Leah Thomas, a transgender swimmer who was a member of the University of Pennsylvania's women's swim team, to compete in the NCAA swimming championships. The class action lawsuit cites Thomas's participation in that championship as well as his access to women's locker rooms during the event as a continuing pattern and practice of discrimination against women in violation of Title IX. The NCAA in a statement pushed back and said, "We support all women's sports and will continue to do so." Thomas began swimming at Penn on the men's team in 2017 before beginning hormone replacement therapy in May of 2019. By 2021, he met the NCAA's hormone therapy requirement to swim on the Penn's women's team. Little note here, when he was a male swimmer, he was ranked 249th in the United States. And then he becomes a woman and becomes the national champion. Oh, but there's no difference between men and women biologically. Okay. After the plaintiff's demands, among the plaintiff's demands is that the NCAA strip any titles or awards given to the transgender athletes who compete in women's events and reassigning and revising them. The suit also seeks damages for pain and suffering, mental and emotional distress, suffering and anxiety, expense costs, and more. The lawsuit states that the organizers of the NCAA directed women's swimmers and teams that Thomaston was entitled to use all designated locker rooms allocated to women's swimmers and teams. That exposes cisgender women, normal women, to shock, humiliation, and embarrassment in violation of their constitutional rights to bodily privacy, lawyers said in a complaint. If you want to see a really good and shocking interview, look up Joe Rogan on YouTube and watch his interview with Riley Gaines about what she actually experienced in, you know, this whole horrific thing with Leah Thomas and what it personally cost her years of training to become the national champion, only to have it stolen to her illegally by this man. It's very powerful, but it's sure as hell about time that men and women fight back. We got to fight them at every level because this stuff has got to stop. Okay? I'm going to wrap up the show by thanking all of you who've donated to the 2024 Victory Fund so far. You know, you're funding the fight, and I have spent every dime you've donated to win fights that are key here in Ohio. We're helping Bernie Moreno. We're helping Reggie Stoffus, who's a really good conservative congressional candidate in the Ohio 6th. We're trying to get Charles Tassel elected in the Ohio 2nd. We're helping this group of House seats where they're going after these Republicans, quote unquote, who betrayed us in Ohio 2 years ago when we elected a supermajority in the Ohio House, 67 out of 99 Republicans. And then 22 of them took bribes from the Democratic unions to vote with the 38 Democrats or 33 Democrats to pick the House Speaker to shut down the entire conservative agenda in Ohio. Like 25 things we were going to do didn't get done because the Democrats bought the House. We recruited some incredibly courageous people to run in the primary against these blue 22 people. I think we're going to win some of those races because of your donations and what we've done, but not enough because we have nowhere near the resources that our opponents have. The teachers unions gave the House Speaker $2.7 million to use to help reelect the blue 22 who gave them control of the House, gave the Democrats control of our Ohio House. Okay? Some of these people got $500,000 to fight our patriots who didn't have $50,000. But you know what? They're fighting them, and we're in the fight, and we're going to win some of those because of your donations. And I can't thank you enough. But the fight's going to continue all year till we got to go to November. So if you want to give, if you want to fund the fight, go to freedomforallpac.org, freedomforallpac.org, because we can't participate as We the People Convention in these federal races. By law, under Citizens United, we can endorse, and we have, We the People Convention endorsed Donald Trump, as you know. We endorse Bernie Moreno. We endorse others. But after that, we can't participate in what's called electioneering. We can't buy ads to support them. And so we have to do that through our super PAC, the Freedom for All PAC. And you can donate if you go to freedomforallpac.org and make your donations there. We greatly appreciate it. All right, we're going to wrap it up. I need you to tell people about this podcast. If you have questions, if you want to challenge something I said, write to me at info@wethepeopleconvention.org. We read them. We respond to them. Give us new story ideas. Give us links. That's why you hear stories here that you don't hear anywhere else. Because our members throughout, we have members in all 50 states. They feed information to us, which I vet and then share with you. That's what this is about. This is our podcast. I just produce it and deliver it. It's your podcast. And so thank you for everybody who does send that information to us. Okay? Now, I'll wrap it up by saying, If you're a Trump supporter in Ohio who's not a registered Republican, you got to get out on Tuesday and vote in the Republican primary. Just show up at your primary location where you normally vote and say, give me a Republican ballot and vote for Donald Trump and Bernie Moreno, and then go to our Freedom for All PAC to see which congressional candidates we support. Go to our Ohio Citizens PAC website to see which state candidates we endorse. Okay? You got to turn out, or the Democrats are going to turn out in the Republican primary and build that firewall till they have a win-win of Matt Dolan or Sherrod Brown in the fall. We can't allow that. Those of you in the rest of the country, make sure you tell others the same thing. And the story's at wethepeopleconvention.org. Just go look, you know, at that graphic that had DeWine and Dolan and Portman on it, and share that with people in your state. We've got to understand how to fight back and fight the fight and protect our MAGA agenda. Okay? I hope you have a great week. I hope, you know, the weather's improving here. We've had a very light winter. We had some scary tornadoes, which we don't get a lot of in Ohio, and had some people die the other night, and it came pretty close to us. And we're sorry for those families, and we pray for them. But I hope you have a good week. I hope you start getting out more in the weather. That'll make your attitudes better. And don't let the news get you down. You know, there's lots of good news, too. We're on the march. We're doing some things. We're doing a lot of things. And you have to do that individually. Just take every opportunity you see to defeat the left, no matter what it is, whether it's putting a sign up for a conservative candidate or donating to one or speaking out, writing a letter to the editor, denouncing some, you know, leftist government policy, whatever. Every day, get up and defend our Constitution, our free speech, and the rule of law. Every day. You do that, we're going to win. In the end, we're going to win. It's going to be a hell of a year, folks. After the last month I've been through, I don't know if I can make it through the end of the year. You know, you talk about Joe Biden. I'm not sure if I can make it through. The stress has been unbelievable, and I'm trying to do some things to manage that. Please keep us, Nan and I, in your prayers. I mean it. I pray every day for God to give me wisdom and courage. Wisdom so I know what we should do and the courage to do it. Because I take really, really personally my responsibility to you to tell you the truth and to give you good guidance. And I know you give your trust to me, and I never want to abuse that. So I pray to God every day to help me make good decisions. So have a good week, and God willing, we'll both be back next week. You've been listening to the We the People Convention News and Opinion Podcast, and my name is Tom Zawistowski. God bless you. And God bless America. Let's get